Well done, and good to see you all. Starting the move towards Christmas, and we're feeling in a happy mood here because we've got some great bottles open. So let me introduce Pierre, who will say hello and a few things about himself, and then we'll come to the wines. Pierre.
Okay. Well, good evening, everybody. So I'm Pierre. I'm now the vinificateur of the Domaine du Rocher since 2005. So I start when my father lived, give me the key of the domain. So I start since already 17 years now. So we managed to evolve a little bit the style of winemaking and the practice in the vineyard through this period. So now we start to, we have an idea of the wine we want to do. So with my wife, Marianne. And so now we, after 15, 16 years, we start to find really the key of the practice in the vineyard, in the cellar, and for the bottling and everything. So we have mostly now a very old vineyard. So from Etelois, it was planted in 1923. Same for La Beauvieille vigne. Then we will have the La Tricière planted in 1949 and 1969. Griotte, it's exactly the same date than Italo because it's very close. And Claude-Bèze was planted in 1920. So we have mostly for what the wine we will drink today, it's mostly vineyard planting 100 years ago. So we have mostly mille rendage with a very natural concentration with small berries and with always a good acidity and a good balance with sugar. So for the last few vintage, it was very interesting because we didn't have very high alcohol level. It's close to 12.5 normally and with a nice acidity. So it gives a good energy in the wine.
When do you think your wines first really started getting noticed and everybody talking about what you were doing?
I think it was 2013, but before I do a lot of rock climbing, so I most focused on sports. And then I stopped like in 2010, so then I focused on my mine in winemaking. So in 2013, I think we managed very well this vintage.
Yes, which wasn't an easy year at all. And I remember we came and tasted a little vertical of Lavo Saint-Jacques here with you. And 2013 did seem to be the start of the special period. So everything we're going to taste today is since that, apart from the famous Griotte Chambertin, which is tiny. One of the things about this domain, which makes it stand out as well, is that Pierre succeeds in vinifying really small volumes. I remember last year when tasting the 2020s, there were 16 cuvées of all, but 8 of them were one barrel or less. And most people say it's just too difficult to do, we're not going to try it. But Pierre is manic like that, and likes to do everything. So you have quite a big production in village Gevrey-Chambertin.
Well, over the 8.5 hectares we have in total, around 5 is a village.
Of which you make several different cuvées.
Yes, the biggest is a blend of some parcel, of some plots. But then we do Genevroy, Champ, Le Clos, Envaune, and Aux-Étalois. So there is 6 different cuvées.
Of which the one we're going to taste in both 2017 and 2015 is Aux-Étalois. So tell us a bit about that vineyard. And also, why don't we pour ourselves a glass of it?
Yes, Aux-Étalois, we have a vineyard of...
Just a cans.
Right, sorry. The total production size is half an hectare of Étalois. But for this cuvée, we keep just the... we do one barrel per year, but just from the side close to Griotte.
Yes, if you've got an app which has got the vineyards on, or if you look at a map later on, you will see Griotte Chambertin, and you'll see a little finger sticking up into it from the village sector, and it's that finger which makes this cuvée. rather than all of it. So you have, it's more elevation, so you're going uphill there.
Yes, sir.
And the rest of Etelwa is flat?
The bottom is flat, the route nationale, the national road, but the bottom is blend into the Jura Chambertin QV, the normal QV.
By the way, if you'd like to ask questions, don't hesitate, but do make sure you've got the Bluetooth thing close to you so we hear you. So 2017, as we all know, is a quite a big crop and a very accessible wine, which makes it suitable for drinking young, unlike most other recent vintages. So that's why we decided to put the 317s first to kick the show off. So your Etelwa 2017, do you remember how much you made?
One barrel.
Wow. Okay.
But the yield is often very low because the soil is very tiny, the vineyard very old. So even in 17, the average of the yield was perhaps 20 hectoliters per hectare.
So this wine will have been destemmed, or you left a few whole bunches in it?
We keep 15% of full bench.
Right. So it varies across the range. Some wines you do more and some you don't do any at all.
Well, the lower appellation, the biggest, like Bourgogne, Gevrey, Genevois, Champs, it's distant. And then for the small cuvée, we keep 15% of full bench. And for Castier, Griotte, and Chambertin from the Negos, we keep 100% wall bench.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll get to...
Even the Griotte 12 was 100% wall bench.
Wall bench, yeah. So what I'm thinking about this is that the fruit strikes me as being very approachable, very ready to drink, but there's still a good structure behind. The tannins are very fine, but they're certainly present. There's not a huge amount of acidity, but it's not lacking either. But acidity is not a big feature of 2017. But I'm getting a nice long aftertaste. It's staying with me in the mouth very well. But good stuff at village level. And after that, we're going to head out and see what Premier Cru and what Grand Cru does. I hadn't known, or at least I hadn't remembered, I had known, that this also was 1923. So,
yes, right.
So next year is going to be a big birthday year at the Domaine. Yeah. So it was your grandfather or great-grandfather who planted these? Must be great-grandfather.
Yes, but I don't know if once they buy the plot, so...
Ah, okay. It may be purchased since. Okay.
But my grandfather was born in 1920, so it was the grand-grandfather.
Right, yes. So unlike you, we don't have an array of five glasses, so we will have discard. Non, c'est bon. Oh, it comes up. Lavo Saint-Jacques, what would have been great is if we could have looked at the regular bottling and the 1923 side by side. But the regular bottling has a mix of some of the 1923 goes into the regular bottling.
Exactly.
So as not to change it too much by removing all of 23, but you have enough of it so you can make a couple of barrels.
So we just want to do one barrel of La Beauvais Vignoire.
Okay.
And we use the middle part of the plot, in the middle of the slope.
Right.
Because at the beginning we start to use just the top part, but I think it was a little bit too concentrated, and it was, I think, better to take the middle of the slope.
Because your rows start by the road, and they go up to the forest above. Yes, like everybody. Long rows. I was talking to Cyrielle Rousseau, and she says they always do the Lavo Saint-Jacques. They always pick it in the morning because the rows are so long, and they also bend a bit at the top so that you can't see you're coming to the end. And if you leave it for the afternoon, the pickers get pretty demoralized, seeing how much they still have. But it's true, most people in Lavo Saint-Jacques, they do have rows that start at the bottom and go all the way up. So this has got more concentration, more energy, but you'd expect that. Sorry. Maybe what we'll do is when we've tasted the 3 17s, we'll ask you for some feedback as how they're tasting with you. There's more acidity in this wine, I find.
I always in the woods.
Yeah.
It's always more like acidity.
You've got cool air coming down from the Combe de Lavaux, which means it's normally the vineyard that most people pick at the end, and it always has this extra freshness. And it's got a bit more of everything. This wine is more persistent in the mouth as well.
It's more concentrated.
So this is Lower Saint-Jean. I mean, look, and you have over 1 hectare of this vineyard, which is amazing.
We have 6 plots representing 1.2 hectare in total. Right.
Okay.
It's given that everything else is tiny, like 0.13 or 0.02 and so on. Apart from the village, Chevrolet-Champoutins, this is the only cuvée which is available. Sorry, the regular Lavaux Saint-Jacques is the only cuvée that's available in decent volume from the domain. Which you will be more clued up on the pricing than I am, but I'm sure there is quite a difference between the pricing of the regular and the yes. tiny amount of the Vieille Vigne. Okay, so why don't we take a look at the Grand Cru, which we have in bottle and you have in Magnum, so you'll be able to go on drinking it through the dinner.
So planted in 1920.
Which means that even though they only have a very small amount, in 2020 they did 2 cuvées, a regular and the Vieille Vigne centenary cuvée. Just sort of what, 1 barrel of each, I think?
Yes, sir, like exactly. That.
Crazy. For the first time, I'm finding the bouquet is still quite backward and not leaping out of the glass. Beginning to come now with some swirling around, definitely deeper concentration of color, younger color. I'm finding the whole bunches show quite nicely in this. They lift the fruit, give you a little peppery touch, open up the flavor more on the palate. It's really lovely. It's a beautifully svelte, suave wine that I suppose you can drink now. I am getting pleasure out of it now, but I think there's still quite a lot more still to be offered further down the road.
Normally, Club Bez needs close to 10 years to be really ready and open.
Do you think there's any difference inside Clos de Bez depending on where your vineyards are, or do you think it is reasonably the same for everybody?
Our place is just in the middle, the appellation, and we have the from the road to the forest. So you
couldn't be better placed. Yeah. Yes. It's one of the good things of a lot of vineyards, not Castier, but Clos Saint-Jacques, Chambertin, Chambertin Clos de Bez, Lavaux Saint-Jacques, many of them, that everybody has got rows that start at the bottom, go up to the top. So it's similar because you do get quite a difference. It's not just the degree of the slope, but also whenever you get up near the top, you tend to get a lighter soil and a more white soil, a little bit of cooling air from the forest. So it's good to have the combination.
From the little deep soil at the bottom,
yes,
the tiny soil at the top, and it gives, I think, more complexity in the wine.
So who would like to be spokesman from the dining table for the first three wines?
My general comment is that there's an enormous amount of precision and brightness in all of them, and you can see kind of the uplift in quality is probably not the right term, but as you progress from Village to Premier Cru to Grand Cru. And also I think you see in the vintage the approachability that we've seen across 2017 as well. And I particularly enjoy the Village. I enjoy the Premier Cru. I think that Clos de Bez is probably a little closed, but still enjoyable, good balance, et cetera. But I'd say the first two are the ones that are giving you the most pleasure at the moment.
Yes, okay. I spend so much of my time tasting young wines in barrel that when I can see the potential pleasure to come, that already gives me pleasure now, if you see what I mean. It is more closed for Clos de Bez, but nonetheless, there is a sensuality in the fruit there and the length of flavor, which I think is over and above the other two. I did feel that they were very clear steps up.
Yes, right. Exactly. But
yeah,
I think with Italois, it gives perhaps 90% of the potential, but Clos de Bez, but perhaps just now 50% of the potential, and we need to wait perhaps 5-6 years more to have 100% of the potential of this wine.
Is there anything you remember particularly about making 2017 as a vintage? Was there anything that stood out for you?
No, I think it was. We managed the vineyard with the old vineyard. I remember it was normally a huge vintage with high quantity of wine, but with the old vineyard, we managed to keep a lower quantity of wine. So I think we have a very nice concentration and a good detail on each wine.
There's certainly nothing dilute about these wines, it must be said. So what we're seeing at the moment with the 2021 vintage being tasted is everybody saying how much they're enjoying getting back to a fresher and more accessible style of wine after the really powerful 18, 19, 20. It's really difficult to taste the 21s and the 20s side by side. Often when you do your tasting rounds, some of the people like to show the previous vintage as well. And after the first two or three experiences, I said, no, stop, don't do it anymore. Because the 21 looks light compared to the 2020, but the 2020 looks a bit brutal and ugly compared to the 21. So it's better just to take each vintage as it comes. And with 17 and 21, you've got wines which are digest, the French would say, so easily digestible, and don't need vast amounts of keeping, but still show the beautiful qualities of the vineyards. So what we decided to do was to do the flight so that we would see sort of each of the vineyards in the first flight. So you now have the 15 La Tricière, which I think we do have.
Yes.
Yes, we have. And the 12 Griot, which in fact we don't have because probably all the bottles have been sold. There's so little of it. So if you'd like to continue forwards and taste the La Tricière.
Thank you very much.
So tell us about your La Tricière vineyard holding.
So La Tricière, our plot is located just south of the Chambertin. So it's the first parcel in north of La Tricière. My father bought this plot in 1989. And it was from Vignal Pantin in 1949 and 1969. And we usually do 2 or 3 barrels per year of this wine. Just in 16 and 19, we do just 1 barrel, but it's normally 2 or 3 barrels per year.
Yes. So why do you think that your yields tend to be lower than most people's? Is it something specific in the vineyards? Is it to do with the age of the vines?
I think the age of the vines.
Right, yeah.
It's normally due to... Because we have a lot of small plots, so... My grandfather didn't change the vineyard. My father do the same. And because we are like that this year, if we change the vineyard, we'll produce wine for 10 years. So it's better just to change
each individual dead vine. Yes. I don't know about at your end, but at our end, the bouquet on this wine is absolutely sensational. 2015, we were just talking before we came on air, and we're thinking that neither of us had really looked at much in the way of 2015 recently. And it could be closed down at 7 years old, but that bouquet absolutely leaps out of the glass. So this is a wine which gets a bit of the whole clusters, but not too many. Unfortunately, I've got some more wine tastings this afternoon, otherwise I definitely wouldn't be spitting out. This is multi-layered. I think the Clos de Béarn is the essence of elegance, if you like. It's incredibly smooth and supple, whereas Latricia has a little bit more obvious weight, if you like, but and it's got different levels of fruit that come one after the other. Sir. It might also be the vintage.
I think it's mostly due to the vintage,
which was
more concentrated and ripe compared to 17. But I think for me, 15 looks like a little bit than 05, but I think the maturity was a little bit better in 15.
In 15 than 5.
So the tannin are more silky and it's more round. And but the flavor is a little bit quite similar.
I said for a long time that 2005 was my favorite ever Burgundy vintage. And then along came 15, and I thought, well, it's got pretty much all the good things about 05, and it maybe has just a little bit more sweetness of fruit, and it's a candidate for being one of the all-time greats, I must admit. It's really the last of the superb vintages before we get to the state when they get even richer and hotter and drier from 2018. And you really have got to make sure you get the balance right in those last 3 years, 18, 19, 20. Otherwise, the wines don't work, but the people who did get them right have made great wines then too. I'm interested that wine is reasonably accessible. Do you think it will close down at some point, or do you think it's always going to be
beautiful? But I think now it's already 7 years old, so I think it was closed perhaps 2 years ago, but now
It's open.
It's start to open, and I think it will be on the good way to.
Something else I was discussing with Pierre beforehand was that we feel that today it's possible to make red Burgundy so that it's very accessible while it's young, but it stays together, stays young for a long, long time, and will make very, very good old wines as well. Whereas in the whites, we slightly feel that the change in style and the desire to make wines of more elegance and finesse probably means that they won't last as long, even without any issues of oxidation. But they will be very good at 10, 12, 15 years old, but they probably won't be great at 30 or 40 years old, the way vintages from the 70s are still great. That's my feeling, and also Pierre echoed that.
Yes.
D'accord. Now, it's all, we don't have the next wine to taste, but if you would like to taste the 2012 Griot Chambertin, it's worth pointing out that when you taste with Pierre the whole range, you have the Chambertin Clos de Béarn and his cuvée of Chambertin that he's made for the last couple of years through a contract, before you have the Griot Chambertin. So this is the wine that finishes the tasting because it is the star of the range, if you like. And you've never, ever had enough grapes to make even one full barrel.
No, we do.
The biggest you've made is
80 liters of Griot each vintage. So, and 12 was the second vintage with Ugriez. We started in 2011, and 12 was the second vintage.
Because you only got the vineyard in 2011, or because before there was so little that you didn't?
Before it was blended into the Osetelois.
Oh, right. So if you can find the Osetelois from before 2011, then you've got a quarter of a barrel of Grioche in there. Lovely. I mean, this is completely crazy to make wine. If you think about it, it's typically 80 litres, and a barrel is 228 litres. So you are a third of a barrel, approximately.
Yes, right.
How do you do it? I mean, physically. Yeah.
That's just, we have a small vat of 300 liters, and just with same process as the big vat, but just a little bit more plus vigilant.
You just have to be more careful.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And then afterwards, for the aging, you've got a barrel made up?
Yes,
the right,
we have
size.
A barrel on the size of the one we produce. We have two barrels, so one of 80 and one of 86 liters. And we keep it since, I think now, 6-7 years. We have the same.
So depending on the size of the sip that each of you take, you can work out what percentage the crop you're drinking with every mouthful.
And it is the smallest cuvée ever produced in Burgundy.
Yeah, the smallest is consistently produced. Yes, yeah. Wow. Though the Mentors have made a quarter barrel of Musigny in 2021.
Right.
But normally yours for a regular bottling, it must be the smallest. Well. Anyway, remember my mantra that rarity does not mean quality. But in that wine, obviously we're not tasting the 2012 with you, but each vintage that I've tasted over the last 5+ years that I visit here, that wine is really one of Burgundy's most extraordinary things. How's the Latricia showing?
Brilliant. It's great.
Yeah.
Very, very great.
It's very exuberant in our glasses. Right. So 2012 was a vintage that's rather fallen off the radar because there wasn't very much made, partly hail in the Côte de Beaune, but not the Côte de Nuit, and partly bad weather at the flowering. So the crop was very small all the way through. So you find a little bit of a greenness in the Griot 2012.
Okay.
Is it? Is it 100%?
Yes, sir, 100%.
Okay.
But I tested it, it was 1 month ago, and it was clearly not green, but...
Yeah, it is, Richard, of course, it is 100% whole bunch, which could be giving a character of that sort alongside it. But of the two, it sounds like Latricia is showing the better today. Yeah. We aren't here to see your bottle and try your bottle, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, firstly, I think we all think that Latricia is absolutely magnificent and you know, Moorish and just in a perfect place now, though it will go on for years. But the question I'd like to ask Pierre is how would he like his wines to be described by us? So I guess what I'm saying is, what kind of wine is he trying to make to elicit, you know, is it structure? Is it refinement? Is it purity? I mean, how would he like us to see his wines in terms of what he's trying to achieve as a winemaker? Is that a complicated question?
We do something like with elegance, something digest and easy to drink, and in the same time to have like something with power and concentration. So I think it's something what we achieve in 21. It's very elegant, but in some time, it's a very nice density. It could be like, perhaps we can find it perhaps just elegant, but in the same time, there is a very nice complexity, density, and but this is very difficult to have the both things together. Together.
I think I would add a comment that when I first tasted Pierre's wines, which would have been before 2013, I found them very good, but they finished a little hard. There wasn't the flow through of the fruit all the way through the palate. There was a slight interaction from the tannins at the back. And that from the changes from, let's say, 2013 onwards, that seems to have gone from the wines. And now they are very coherent all the way through. We can see that in 2015s, and I found that in 17s as well. Do you know what did you, is there any one thing that you changed that makes you think from 2013 you were mastering what you did?
I think the practice in the vineyard was it. We changed some details each time, but when you change a lot of details,
yes,
it's why you have the difference at the end. But the most important thing is that when we harvest, we want just to have something. We have a sorting table, but we didn't use it because we want just to harvest something at the perfect phenolic maturity. And
right.
So I think this is the key to have something. If it's not overripe or not underripe, if it's at the good moment, I think you can have everything.
So the perfect choice of picking date.
Yes.
Yes.
And we have just vineyard in Gevrey, so it's very easy to the. Ouais, la Trissa is the far la vigne la plus éloignée. The
which is
la Trissa Chambertin.
La Trissa, okay. La Trissa Chambertin is the furthest away from the. I mean, everything is. I'm just looking at the list.
Very, everything is very close. Less than 2 kilometers, so it's very easy to do the harvest to choose the right, really right date of picking of each vineyard. So to have something very balanced, because in the for the vinification we just use the grapes, some carbonic gas to protect, and that's it. So we just, I think for me and for my wife, it's if you have the balance in the grape, you will have the balance in the wine and the concentration and everything.
Yeah. I like that idea. And I think when I check your dates of picking, you're not one of the later people because you don't like overripeness.
Yes, and we like are always very low yield compared to the others. So we start the last few minutes, we start the first.
Yeah.
In Gevrey, we'll pick the grape.
So first to start, but they're right. Where have you heard that before? Answer Arnelant in Meursault. Good. Okay. Well, we did play around with how to do the order of the wines. The reason we went with the first flight of five and then the second flight of five was just so that, depending on how long we could stay with you, we would have a chance to talk about all the vintages. But it's, in another sense, a bit bizarre because it means we go back to the village Aux Etelois in 2015. Just so you know that the other single vineyard village wines are Genroy and Champs. Both of which are on the Brochon side of Gevrey Chambertin, which is where I think probably the many of the most exciting Gevrey wines come from, just on the edge between Gevrey Chambertin and Brochon. And with the Premier Cruz, also made in very small quantities, Champeau, Estonel Saint-Jacques,
and Castier.
And Castier. Which I'm missing from my list because it's more recent. Yeah. Everybody should make Castier, such a wonderful vineyard. And then in the Grand Cruz, we've tried Clos de Bez, Gruyère Chambertin, La Trissa Chambertin. There's also Charmes Chambertin. And now there is a little bit of Négociant Chambertin. Well, I say Négociant, but Pierre runs the vineyards as one part of the contract and then buys the grapes as the other side. So all the work is as if it were Domaine. Yeah. So now, do you have the second series served yet?
We do.
We do. So we're going back to 2015 Etelois, and we have that as well. So we will try that with you. It doesn't have the same volume and exuberance that the La Trissa Chambertin had, but it has got finesse, and it's got good acidity as well, which I think is important. How do you feel about when you're making a wine, do you think about the fruit acid balance or the fruit tannin balance or both?
I think both way. We just want a very nice balance between everything. We didn't give importance to the color of the wine, but just for the taste.
Yeah.
And the balance of everything. But I think Italo is perhaps more tannin than Latricia, but I think more fine, refined tannin. But I think a good quantity of tannin in this wine.
Yes. It's child of Briot. But when they drew the boundaries, it didn't make it into Briot. A little later, I might go back and retry the Latricia 15 alongside, but we also have. Do we not? What's coming up next? We have the Laveur Saint-Jacques 15, which again we have some here open in front of us that we will try that. But the nose of the Etoile is growing on me. It's getting more concentrated in the glass as time goes by. Should we try the Laveur?
Yeah, Jack, so I feel like my takeaway is that 15 is a very good year.
Yes.
They are singing.
Yeah, I mean, if you were trying to describe what would make up your ideal vintage in Burgundy, it's hard to see how 15 doesn't match that. All the fruit that you want, but it's not vulgar, and just the perfect structure.
They are drinking beautifully. They just drink very nicely right now.
Yes, but the only thing is, I think they've got a lot more to come later on. Yes. So you've got enough of them, do drink them, some of them now. But I think there will be layers to unfold later on, which you'll miss if you drink them all now. Whereas with 2017, you probably won't get extra layers when they're old wines. They'll hold, but they won't improve. And 15s, I think, will.
It's still very young, 15.
Huh? Yeah.
It's great.
I'm getting a really beautiful nose on our Laveur Beaulieu.
Yeah, the
Laveur. Pierre, of the vineyards that you have, do you have your favorites?
Ah, the favorite vineyard.
I know it's tough. It's like, you know, picking like a favorite.
It's just too difficult question, but I like Estournel. Estournel and Latricière.
Why?
Why? Because I think Latricière, perhaps not 15 because it's a little bit different vintage, but I think Latricière, there is some character in this wine we can find in the other wine of the range, and even in Gevrey, there is very something really... aerien and
ethereal, yes.
And normally in Gevrey, it's very deep wine, but in Latricia, it's always very like a perfume and a very light flavor. And
despite it's a deep soil, but it provides these wines with most beautiful aromatics.
But Latricia, our part is very.
Oh, you have a shallow
tiny soil, right?
Right, okay.
Because we are just south of Chambertin.
Yes.
So the soil are very tiny and there is not too much soil, so it gives a wine very, just like a perfume, I think.
Well, if I hadn't already looked at the Latricia Chambertin 15, I would think this Laveur Saint-Jacques 15 was just about as good as you can get.
Yeah, agree. Yeah. Which Jasper maybe raises another question is, do you think that Laveur is a slightly underrated vineyard in Gevrey, relative to Claude Saint-Jacques, but.
I'll answer and then we'll get it all. Well, Pierre answer first and then, tu veux répondre?
For me, it's one of the best first vines in Gevrey after compared to Claude Saint-Jacques. I feel it's a different vineyard. So, but for me, since 2014, Laveur Saint-Jacques, it's sometimes compared to some Champ Charme or Latricia, it's think it's very close in terms of quality.
Yeah. Officially, there are various sort of guidelines to what should be the price per barrel for wines which are sold from Grez to Négociants or between Négociants. And the Premier Crus are at one level, and then a few of them are at a higher level. And Laveau Saint-Jacques is one of those. I think maybe in time...
Laveau Saint-Jacques and Chapelle, a Petite Chapelle, I think.
Petite Chapelle, Laveau Saint-Jacques. And
Clos Saint-Jacques, yeah.
So and Clos Saint-Jacques, of course. Those are the three at a different level. I love Castille, the other side. But so you have got this Coombe in French, the Combe de Laveau, which comes down from the hills, was originally the source of the big river that is the reason why the vineyards of Chevry-Chambertin spread out so wide and below the main road, and it's legitimate, is because there was a water course that brought down all sorts of interesting soils and spread them around. It's a road I use quite often to get back home, and the little road winds its way up and it goes through a tunnel in the rock, but it's really noticeably cooler there than the rest of Chevry-Chambertin. So now in these warmer years, I think Laveau Saint-Jacques' reputation is only going to go up from here. It's an area that really benefits. It used to be possibly a fraction too cool, possibly. And certainly, I mean, I remember Denis Morte used to chaptalize his every year, including in 2003. Nowadays, and everybody, you pick it last.
Yeah.
Nearly last. Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly very good, and I think it's growing.
Cuvée of La Bouvievine is just a step up than the regular cuvée of La Bouvievine.
Of course, with the ancient vines. The other thing you should know is that you're allowed to spell it either Laveau, L-A-V-A-U-T, or A-U-X, as if it were plural. And normally we write it as AUX, and I think on the various emails that went round, it was down as AUX. But Pierre is one of the AUT team. So if you were going by that email that came round, you need to swap the X out for a T.
But what's the difference? Like, you know, why T versus the X?
Dealer's choice, frankly. In Burgundy, nothing is ever simple, and whenever they can find different ways of writing things. It really is a choice. There's no reason. But you'll also see with Griot Chambertin, sometimes it's Griot without an S, and sometimes it's with an S. The tricky ones are where the growers themselves forget which it is, and one year it's one thing and the next year it's a different thing. So I have to have consistency on our website. That makes life complicated. Now, alongside that, you, but not we, have got the 2014 in Magnum, and I'd be thrilled to hear your views on how the 14 shows alongside the 15.
And the 14 was the first vintage for La Bouvievine.
Ah, okay. First year, 14. I'll make a note of that.
Should we code glasses for the, or do we have glasses for the 14 then? Yeah.
You go what?
We need to clear glasses.
You haven't been served it yet. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do it.
Can't do it.
We're professionals, Zach.
Okay, so what you've got still to come is the 14 Laveau Saint-Jacques and Magnum, and then the Clos de Beers in 16 and 14. So while being poor, we could maybe talk about the vintages. I'll do it in theory, and then Pierre can tell me his impression from here. 16, and 16 was a frost year, but the reds came out of it really pretty well. Were you badly hit by the frost in 16 in Clos de Beers?
Not Clos de Beers, no.
Not Clos de Beers.
Okay. Some problem in La Trissière from the lower appellation, like Bourgogne Chardonnay and Laveau Saint-Jacques. Because each place there was a little bit of humidity, and like in the Combe or the lower place, there was some problem. But Clos de Beers and the side of Brochon was very nice.
Did all right. Okay, so that's all right. So otherwise, I mean, 16 would have been one of the great vintages if it hadn't been for the frost. 14, a bit more complicated. A year that the level of maturity ripeness.
Well, I think it was
quite get there.
Just at the right level.
Yeah,
I think.
I mean, some people panicked because there was some rot approaching in 14, and the people who panicked and picked too early, you can really tell. The wines have a slightly shrill acidity, and the fruit is not ripe enough. But those who were able to hold out, their decision-making plus the right vineyard practices, then I think the wines did pretty well in 14. So
it starts to show quite well now at 14. Take a little bit of time, but now I think it should be nice.
So, sorry that there wasn't any 13 around. The other thing which would have been fun, you have to do it separately at home sometime, is to compare the two Level Saint-Jacques, the regular bottling of the Vieux Vin. But Hong Kong seems to attract the super cuvées. Let's have a look.
The 14 nose is pretty good.
Yeah.
That nose, it's very poor. It's bright. It's good.
Due to the old vineyard and the Level Vin, the quantity was, like, I think less than 20 liter per hectare. So I think we have the very nice phenolic maturity in 14. So it should be
right. So that makes a difference. Nicer. Yeah. Because it was a vintage that started out as a normal size crop, I think. Not specifically one of the very small ones. So the people who made more wine would definitely have been less ripe. Yeah. So do you have all three of all the last three, or do you just have the Lavo for now?
Just
Lavo. Just Lavo, okay. Well, we might leave you to enjoy the two Clos de Beers on your own. But before we leave you, just going back to Lavo, the 14 showing well, but not challenging the 15, would that be correct? Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, we know that there is one essential question which we will ask shortly, but apart from that, does anybody have any questions either about tonight's wines or about Pierre's practices or what he'd like to see in future? Any questions to ask Pierre while we have him?
Which vineyard does he find the most challenging?
Okay.
I'm changing. It's mostly like Bourgogne Chardonnay, and the lower appellation. For the appellation of the on the slope, it's always why we have less humidity, less water, more wind, so we have less diseases. It's older vineyards, so like Club Bet, it's always something not simple to do, but there is less challenge than to do a good Bourgogne or a good Bourgogne Chardonnay. So sometimes there is more things to do in the Bourgogne to have something
right
to the high level.
And amongst the Premier Crus and the Grand Crus, they all work. There isn't one that causes you more anxiety.
Lavo, it depends the vintage, because it's more humid. So if it's a humid vintage, at the end of the before the harvest, it's a little bit difficult sometimes to have a good maturity in Lavo, but due to the rest and due to the vineyard is like older than when I start, so I think now we manage something quite well. And
okay. So you've now been doing it since 2007 or 5, did you say 2005?
Or 5, right.
5. So you've been doing it for 17 years. Are there still things that you think to yourself, I need to go a further step from here? Or do you think you have arrived at the style that you really want to make?
Now.
Is there still more to discover?
Always,
yeah.
But, and then the more you the more you have experience, you know there is more things to improve. So there is always something to improve. So it's very exciting to have the next vintage and
the next challenge. And with the
challenge.
And with the global warming, then clearly there are things that you
have to do to adapt. each practice, each vintage. So it's very interesting.
Okay.
Still very interesting. And
do you, another question from you, or shall we come to the question we ask all our guest vignerons, which is, if you could have one other vineyard that you don't work with, what would it be? If somebody could just say, here you have half a hectare, or you don't even need that much for you, but a bit of one vineyard that's missing, what would you really like? When you see it with other people, you think, I'd like to have that.
I think perhaps a white wine. Something like Côte de Beaune.
All right, so Côte de Beaune white, okay.
But which one?
Which one?
Which village?
Perhaps Puligny.
Okay, right. A bit of Puligny Pucelle, a bit of Puligny Les Caillerets. Why not? Demoiselle. Yes, Demoiselle would be just right, because there's so little of it, it would fit your profile. Very small. And one other Grand Cru in Gevrey-Chambertin. Okay, we're saying you have got Chambertin, you have got Clos de Bears, and you have got La Tricia and Griot.
And Chambon. So
perhaps, so you don't have Mazy, you don't have Ruchot, you don't have Chapelle, you don't have Mazoyère. The Charme is Mazoyère.
Perhaps Chapelle.
Chapelle, okay. Wonderful. Well, you have bottles to finish, and even better than that, you have a couple of magnums to finish. So we will leave you to enjoy those. And I will be back at the beginning of January with a Costurie event, which I think many of you are signed up for. So we will see you then. And otherwise, leave you to enjoy. So great to talk, and have a wonderful Christmas.